another crap week of writing. So I have one that I wrote, I think Adam Weiss said something once about this is how you feel in a moment and it's not how you always feel. So, and it's a little bit rude, so I apologize. But I wrote it after having to wait ages for a bus in a town packed with stag mice. And I just had to get this out of my system. I apologize. Labs aren't stags, they're pack animals. Out on the charm offensive, stripers and wingmen and thieves. Each has a part in the pull of something other than their left hand. Who quick is alpha, who needs the feed? With luck and a few pints, he'll take one for the team. I apologize. Okay. So I'm reading a much nicer one now. This is one that I love, and my friend gave me a copy of it as a joke because I'm deadly for losing things like keys, and it takes me about 15 minutes to get out the door every day. So you know this one. It's by Elizabeth Bishop, and she gave it to me for my birthday. Not Elizabeth Bishop. My friend gave it to me. One art. The art of losing isn't hard to master. So many things seem filled with the intent to be lost, that their loss is no disaster. Lose something every day, except the fluster of lost door keys, the hour badly spent. The art of losing isn't hard to master. Then practice losing farther, losing faster, places and names and where it was you meant to travel. None of these things will bring disaster. I lost my mother's watch, and look, my last or next to last of three loved houses went. The art of losing isn't hard to master. I lost two cities, lovely ones, and vaster, some realms I owned, two rivers, a continent. I missed them, but it wasn't a disaster. Even losing you, the joking voice, the gesture I love, I shan't have lied, it's evident. The art of losing is not too hard to master, though it may look like righteous, like disaster.
Thank you, Jen. Next up to the microphone, could we please welcome all the way down from Limerick, Mr. Joe Sheehy.
The faintest whisper from a shy sign betrayed its location, so we stopped, and down a path bordered on both sides by a wire fence, we made our way until, away from the sound of cars and braced assiduously in the shadows of some arthritic trees, there it was, keeping company with the passing Shannon, its green banks still standing proud, facing the world and what it offers, but respectfully declined. Gone are the Norman and the Gael, and in their place passed Badger, Fox and Crow, unburdened by any thought of possession. And of course, we stayed no longer than we should, so when it was time, we retreated back the way we came, back to the sound of cars, but lit by the smile of an October morning. This is called The Barber of Limerick. His tongue is sharper than the scissors he holds in his hand, and he uses it every day to trim the truth. He likes to talk while he works, to tell stories in the lethal fairy tale style that all begin with the line, "I'm not a racist, but..." And he swears that the stories he tells you are true, and that he heard them from some guy who sat in the exact same seat as you. And the villain of the piece doesn't wear black, but is black or Chinese or speaks with an East European accent. And then, with your haircut half finished, he likes to let you simmer in the steam of his sermon, while complicit as a camp guard, he shifts on a carpet of shaven hair. Thank you. And just for the season that did it, this was called Autumn. Brown river running past an audience of trees, willowing on the bank, watching, waiting, wishing to go with the flow to what rumour guesses lies round the bend. The wind, in league with the seasons, is whispering through the eaves, and from the branches charms some leaves that fall like pieces of gold, extracted as payment for the summer's rent. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Sorry about Limerick there last week. We'll get him back to you next year.
Yeah.
Next up to the microphone, could we welcome Anita Daly?
This one is called The One at the Helm. He's written about a Jericho, and it's about a supervisor at work that I met. The supervisor at the work that I was at. The One at the Helm. These words were written to stand by me. It is to be remembered that she cares. If I admitted a problem with some risk to you, those shoulders in that black suit still squarely faced me, and your eyes misted and gazed as you listened. The one you played proudly, affectionately, a showman at heart, known, looked at with admiration by many, maybe countless. He knew too that himself he's a master, unshakable, and naturally he had a place for me too on his court. And the course is working. Being a writer affectionately. You fit to work into a nearby community, printing with niches, or in a magazine niche that is published far away, making a niche for yourself that I wasn't before. I have started to do the same myself, while in awe at your ability to belong. Without my recognition that I am nearly there. They make me feel I belong while I'm learning. It makes me work hard without complaint, find pleasure in being practical. I want to earn my living from writing, if it works, or from something else, if not. And the last one is called Friendship. Sometimes you grasp me like a barnacle sticks to a rock on the beach, unapologetically. You show me how to become friendly when you are not there. Draw strength from inside myself to use you as a good example. I am sincerely seeking love. You are honestly, truly offering friendship.
Thank you, Anita. And next up we have Patricia Walsh.
Right, okay. This poem I wrote 3 or 4 years ago is called Mania. Mania. Don't get up, don't rest, and smile, smile, and smile to yourself in sanity. To the house of gold and her likeness. Stop and shake your blood to beauty and crack the conversation to your own pace, writing in silliness and wit. Crash into 100 shards with glory and folklore and hold the candle to your equals. If only to burn yourself, but never stop to rest, to think, to call a halt to the thundering event, for all this will fall and splinter like a cheap master clock to the recorded stage. This poem is called Christianity. Life sets on a lifetime discussion. Our Lady's lamp cascades over water. A king is born in a war zone, and blooded celebration congeals with 6 pails of water gunfire. What else is born? Hope for anything that goes with scorn of living, and panacea to cover the same knowledge. We go to bed in flames. Our intellect cannot discern between fire and reason. But the Lord's light will shine over those who question Canada's good-born road. And the next poem comes from
When Mother came from Santa Maria, we often used to go to go on holidays there at Christmas, and that was the time when immigration was rife. And even recently big houses were abandoned as people went up to America for a new start. So this one's called Abandoned Bungalow. Cheerful enough is the cold that you witnessed through the wilderness of the local life. Hawthorn and snowstorm could not fight you. Fight how they will, but you kept them warm. So how can you be blamed if your opportune windows were fast to Uruguay? The slanties around, the mold effects, the room containers, there is nothing to be seen in such a structure here on all four walls, slates falling off, exposing your victim's crossways, more than those who left you. Or bosses of crimson, or vents of tears, or everyday life filling out the years, since war is lost distance, going speedily home. Walk on, keep on walking wide, oblige yourself to remain so dry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patricia. And next up, could we welcome Sinead Ryan Smith.
Okay, this is industrial pollution. Sometime in the past, a man took this land, tamed it and made it his own. Generations of his sons have plowed their blood deep in these acres. But today, their land has become their enemy. Acres which saw the birth of love and laughter have become acres of death. Airs, once redolent with the smells of the season, now carries toxins of gas. Rivers run black and slow. People cower with blasty rashes and cancer slumps. And all of this because the chemical plants wanted to treat them fast. And this is under the carpet. Smoky silence blocks out the muffled screams as they suffer the raw edge of pain. These are sounds that are familiar, that are so loud that they are not heard. These are the sounds of a country in a blazing inferno with no escape. But the thick blanket of silence covers it all, sweeping it under the carpet so that we don't have to see. And this last one is called The Wave. With a powerful roar, she rushes toward the beach to gently stroke the shore. Then she fades back, folding, becoming one with herself, drawn by the power of Night's Silver Queen. Until from deep within, the roar swells and crashes its liquid caress once more upon the sand.
Thank you, Shanae. Next up, we have Marie Casey. Marie Casey.
I roamed after ripples drawn in delicate dragonflies in the caverns of my journey. I flitted through armies of blue-green algae, seeking out sustenance in the ships of spawning species that scattered my sunbeams from the pain of my gaze. Through the spasmal season I furied in thought and foam, to wander through the waves, well-read in catatonic poetry. The knowledge was sheened on my silver side, swift with my blessings, floating on the frenzy of oceanic old, for I was raised by the net of man from Troll the Beastipite.
Thanks, Marie. And next up, could we welcome Helen Kavanagh Ronan.
This is now a poem of such, it's an excerpt from a play that I wrote a few years ago. The play is entitled Do This, and this is the final speech. To be born to an innate destiny is fine, but torturous. It calls with your soul, wrestles with your mind, calling, always calling. are tiny trees and sky-tipping mountains. Baby smiles, snowflakes at dawn. A passionate embrace, an ecstatic release. All meaningless. No distractions, colouring the canvas. The final love is impossible for me. Love, an experiment, a distraction, works waiting. Time doesn't equate. There is no such thing. Then it's never too late. One must never heed the bitter cries, forsaken calls. I can never imagine a poet starting to sing in a way I haven't heard for a long time. If the song comes right, the true thing may find a name, singing to me of who and why I am. Speculate, no point. The finality is inevitable. Thanks.
Thank you, Helen. And next up to the microphone, could we welcome Mr. Shambara.
This is a story song I've written called The Christmas Tree. Not season, but almost.
Oh, and we lived in a lodge in the city, and outside the door there grew, oh, a small little hawthorn tree, that pleaded to be blessed by you. Oh, and the seasons had stolen its finery, and it stood that naked alone. It was melt like an arthritic hand, and it stood like a high five of twisted bone. And only you could feel its potential, only you could feel its remorse. And the hawthorn became deferential, and it stood all across like a wounded horse. And all you forced to rest for its finery, with those bottles and robin their breasts. And when we turned on the back light, oh, it sparkled and smiled when it was dressed. Not everyone who walks on our lane, they'll smile when they see our tree. And the hawthorn found a purpose in winter, and it breathes like a coquette from French's story. And there's a moral to be learned from the story. With the beaten down and oppressed, there are elements of past glory that come to the fore when they're addressed.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. Next up, could we please welcome Mr. Edward O'Dwyer.
Okay, this is the first poem. It's the second poem from a sequence of three called The Ballet Girl. This one's called Butterfly. Your feet flutter in the air like a butterfly's wings, and though it is said by a reliable source in science, something so small as the flutter of butterfly wings may cause a natural disaster halfway around the world. If I heard today on the news that an earthquake has ravaged Tokyo, or that another tsunami has invaded Indonesian coast, or that so long quiescent Mount St. Helens is spouting down upon Washington. For their beauty, I could not quell their flight. I could cast no net over them, your feet like butterfly wings. This next one is called Rain on Cruiser Street. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the streets of Limerick, but I have a theory about Cruiser Street. And that theory is, I think all the gorgeous girls in Limerick just get dressed up and walk up and down Cruiser Street all day long. But anyway, you have to see it for yourself to know. So Rain on Cruiser Street. I envy common things sometimes, the simplest things, things that are nothing in most people's thoughts. I envy the rain on Cruiser Street, for instance. I'm probably the only one watching the stranded between Claire's and Boots. But all my envy I could squeeze, compress to a single drop as rain drops by the bucket, to that full luscious drop particularly, that one there, see it, the one trickling slowly down her neck like a lover's soft tongue. Thank you. Okay, I haven't read it in a long time. One of my favorite poets is a guy called James Fenton. And this poem is written after, it takes a line from one of his poems, and the line goes, "What belongs to wind and rain is out of danger from the storm." It's called End of the Storm. Remember how I used to tell you it was the storm, just the wind and rain. Remember how I used to tell you it will all be over soon. Nothing to fear in here, I would say, thinking my gentle hand was the only awesome force in this world you would or should ever know. When you wake, I will be lost to the wind and rain. Out of danger from the storm. Listen to it closely. I will tell you it will all be over soon. Well, I'll finish with this poem. It's kind of a story poem, and it's a true story. Everything in it is true. I mean, once you hear it, you'll know I couldn't have made it up anyway. So it's called Friday the 13th. Just like on any other Friday the 13th, Jason was stalking and butchering hormone-drenched teens, Camp Crystal Lake, the venue on just about every channel. What kind of fool are you, running up the stairs screaming your head off when you should be quietly going out the front door? My mother was scolding a voluptuous blonde from the couch, glass of red wine in her hand. This is not uncommon for her, talking to TV characters as if they can hear her. So, I asked her, and with relative calm and indifference, if you found yourself in a situation like that, do you think you'd have level mind enough to do the sensible thing? Of course, she answered me. I don't think there'd be much of a film, I replied dryly, if all the victims were as sensible as you, heading at that moment towards the door. Upstairs I went and put on the costume I'd bought to wear to a Halloween party the previous year while at college in Colorado. Ragged overalls, trademark hockey mask, complete with weapon of choice, plastic machete. And she was quite wrong. When I kicked open the living room door and pounced on her, the shriek she let out was sharper than the cruelest blade. Her whine dribbling down the wall like the spray of a slashed open throat. Thank you.
Thank you, Edward. Could we please welcome next up to the microphone, Mr. John Keating. John, go ahead. Is he up there? He is. Oh, there he is. Mr. John Keating.
Sorry.
Sorry, that was a bit rude.
It's not my poem, it's the Save Tara.
Hold on. This is my poem. I was reading Ted Healy, or as I like to call him, Ted Huggies, and it's a theme. It's called Venalia. The day came for the festival of Venus, an uproar of processions through old Cyprus. Snowy heifers, horns gilded, kneeled under the axe at the altars. Tales from Ovid, said he. This day, the blacksmith hammers hard on gold. A lover finds a feather in her lover's hair, and in love gives him gifts of wind flowers. The streets are lined with people and birds. On Mount Ephus, a young bull is prepared. The perfume oil massaged on his neck. Muscles massed in the heifer's tense neck. His horns are heaped and heavy with gold. For this bright day, his oasis he's prepared. His pink flesh shivers beneath his warm white hair. Heading a herd in procession of birds. People along the way strew flowers. The blacksmith designs a flower for the fragile face, the delicate neck. He fashions lace. Light as the bird's feather falls, perfect love, white gold and silver tangles like passion and hair, his hand trembles as he lifts it prepared. Her lover, she rises, waits unprepared, deflecting kisses like rain off flowers. She draws a feather from his golden hair and traces lines from breast to neck. She sees it dripped in wine gold, but led like an owl that squirrels like a bird. On top of the altar sit perched birds, and watch the bowl the priests prepare. Watch the old man offer gold, watch the women offer flowers, watch the blood curling from his neck, watch the blood curdle in his hair. The blacksmith grabs him by his gilded hair, the blacksmith's wife scatters like a screaming bird. One massive calloused hand eats her lover's neck, another with a hammer held high prepared. Her lover kneels low like a broken flower, and the blacksmith hammers hard on gold. Each prayer prepared is a waiting bird. Each prayer returned is a golden flower, tangled in her hair, carving at his neck. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And next up, could we welcome Mr. Arjuna Sagar.
Intended to read tonight, so it's all on the laptop. So. This is a poem I wrote about 2 years ago. It's called Upon the Shore of the Plot. I walk the dark sand, but no matter how far, I'm never near the furthest shore. I look for other footprints, but the sharp sands are washed by dark tears and left innocent of understanding. I surround myself with the beauty that I failed to create and drift through driftwood, each wave a memory of a loss yet to come, casting azure assurance in sibilant death upon the shore. The sand swallows soul and soul, and are left innocent of loss. And the next one I wrote about contemplating the Irish night sky. It's called The Traveller's Mimesis. Moon, parise above curving treescapes, pine whispers, skipping up constantly higher slopes, to reach at white-stained kisses, where wind-blown dreams strays soul to searching. Falling, plunging ripples into reflections, moon-silver slivers, curves and furrows plowed by glimpses. And beyond, starlight streaks, riding the bumper of a roaring passage, seen only by the wake haunted in 12 a.m. twilight. In this 24 world, some places still cradle the quiet, crawling, running, tripping minutes of journey's beginning and regret. Back, out, lingering below sky castles, stretches of spiked fertility meeting belowness, and there, small streams of solitary concrete, rustling as wishes and greedy wounds pass overhead with a whining heartbeat.